Welcome to Opus Here. My name is Greg Horn, and really excited about our program this week. Have a couple of gentlemen with us. One of them, Greg Howard, who is a guest a couple months ago, who had 41 years working in the criminal justice system and got ambushed by Jesus and has been trying to help others over the last several years. We had some great programs with him. But he has brought a guest with him today, and he actually talked about this gentleman, shared his story and the impact he was having providing hope. His name is Gerald Gibson. He is the founder and executive director of OMAC, which stands for Operation Making a Change. Right. So, guys, thanks for being here today.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for the invite, man.
I definitely appreciate it, man. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited. Greg shared some of your story, and you and I, the three of us met for coffee a couple months ago, and man, I'm inspired by it. You started OMAC. Obviously, you wanted to make a change to provide hope by investing in the lives of youth here in Lexington to help promote change in their lives,
yes,
Gerald,
sir.
By just helping them to understand the impact of their daily decisions, which even as adults, we need to be reminded of that.
That's right.
But share a little bit about your background. I mean, you speak about this in personal experience. What was it like growing up in a child for you in Illinois?
Man, growing up, man, as a child, you know, it was a very unstable environment. You know, my father, I didn't have him in my life, but there was another gentleman that stepped in, so he became my stepfather. But growing up, man, it was pretty rough. You know, I grew up in poverty. You know, mom was receiving government assistance, and that's something that we had to rely on as far as income. Where I grew up at, the really didn't have a lot of positive role models. Number one, you step outside, and there's a lot of crime and criminal behavior from drug dealing, gangs, and robberies, and you know, I was exposed to a lot of that at such a young age, you know, and like I said, once again, you know, at home is where everything starts. So just seeing the drug uses at home and the physical abuse and the negativity, man, it just didn't really play a positive life in my life, especially when I was trying to go to school and learn. So but I was actually liking school for a certain reason, because I was able to go to school and be a kid. I was able to go eat a meal and play on the playgrounds and do something different. It was kind of scary growing up. You know, like I said, you never knew what to expect going home because of a lot of negativity that was going on at home.
Yeah, a lot of times you look at home as your safe place, but unfortunately it wasn't for you.
Right.
And you shared with me that you had to wear a lot of masks as a child, didn't you?
I did. And reason being is because, you know, I had to be a certain way at home. When I was out hanging out in the neighborhoods or whatever, I had to be a certain way or act a certain way. I had to, you know, be this hardened person. Going to school, you had to wear a different mask. I also went to church with my grandmother, so you know you had to have the good mask on, or you know, grandmother would punish you for that. But yeah, I just found myself, you know, I really didn't know who I was, bottom line.
Well, you know, you shared with me when we met a few weeks ago that as an 11-year-old, you already were experimenting with alcohol and cocaine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, most definitely, man. I think I was growing up real fast. A lot of the guys that I hung out with, we shared a lot of similarities. We were come from broken homes, and the only way that we saw to make ends meet were to get involved with the drug dealing, the uses of drugs, and partaking in, you know, gang related activity and whatnot. So yeah, growing up fast.
Well, thankfully, God sent an angel into your life around the age of 12. A lady, Holly Robinson. Tell about Holly.
Well, Holly was you know, she found me. She came to my neighborhood. She pulls up and she asks about me. She was like, "Where's Gerald Gibson?" And we're looking at her like, why? So, but we proceeded to talk, and she stated to me that she just basically wanted to help. And, you know, I really couldn't believe, because what lady, you know, she was a white lady, you know, she came to the neighborhood and she was like trying to help me. That was unreal to me. But she assured me that all her intentions were good. So basically all Holly did was pick us up once or twice a week. We went to play basketball. We ate food. And basically, she just wanted to spend some time with us. But the biggest part is that we had to learn Bible scriptures. So we're going to study the Bible. That's what she said. And I'm like, wow, that's simple. Eating food, playing basketball. And I usually go to church with my grandmother on Sundays. So to read the Bible and stuff like that. That was nothing. I was already introduced to God as such a young age. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a cool story that you'd share with me. Mm-hmm. All right, yet you still got the rough environment at home.
Yeah.
Then when you leave your house, obviously you've shared about what was the environment was like there. You share with me it was even a miracle that you even made it to high school.
Oh, man, I hung around with a lot of older people when I was growing up. I mean, I had a lot of childhood guys that I ran the streets with, too. But toward the end of the day or whatever, I was hanging around with guys that were old enough to be my father. And so, you know, I was trying to learn how to be a man. And people would say, you know, men don't cry, you know, the guns, the drugs and the stuff that I was doing. I thought that was making me a man, you know. And I had to find out the hard way, man. And I wasn't afraid of that type of stuff anymore. You know, I was actually, you know, by the age of 13 and 14, my mind was already made up that, you know, I was going to be a part of that type of lifestyle. You know, to make it to high school to me was amazing because, you know, I ran from the police. By that time, I'm shot at numerous of times, just doing things that can actually, you know, get me killed. So to make it to high school was very, like I said, I think back now, that was amazing. I probably was nobody but God that helped me.
Yeah, I can imagine from the things you shared with me. We met a few weeks ago. Then on top of just the cocaine, smoking weed, drinking on a daily basis, you also became a father.
I did. When I was 15, in high school, I decided to go to the military. So I joined the ROTC program. But unfortunately, that never happened. My grandmother, she got my family and I out of Illinois and moved us up to Wisconsin. So the first city I moved to Wisconsin was Kenosha, then the Racine area up near Milwaukee and whatnot. But living in Kenosha, Wisconsin, man, it was the same type of environment of where I came from. I mean, they still had the gang culture there. They still had the drugs. I mean, the problems, the same things were existing there. And so I ended up dropping out of high school. And by the age of 18, on my 18th birthday, I had a daughter. A year later, I had a son. 2 years later, I have a daughter. After my third child, I'm on my way to prison. So, I mean, it was some terrible chain of events, but that's what happened.
All right. So you get into jail. You're in and out of drug rehabs. You had a 36-year sentence, but you said you attended a boot camp program. It kind of woke you up a little bit. Talk about that.
Well, the initial charges that I was facing carry a maximum of 36 years, you know, and that's something that when you see that number, you automatically get terrified. And basically, I was charged with delivery of cocaine, and I ended up receiving a 4-year sentence out of 10 years. Okay. So two charges were dropped against me. I pleaded to one, which exposed me to 10 years, and the judge gave me 4 years in prison. And instead of me going to a regular prison, there was an option that was on the table for me. You can either go to boot camp or you can go serve out your 4 years. So me, of course, I want to go home. So I went to the boot camp program 6.5 months and up near Minnesota and Wisconsin, on the border of Wisconsin and Minnesota. Completed that, came home. Everything was good. Got a job, got a relationship back with my family. But where I fell short at is I kept going back to visit my old neighborhoods, my old friends and stuff like that. And basically, I wanted to stay relevant with them. Because when you're involved in the streets, you feel a sense of connection with everybody, and that you don't want to lose that connection. Not only that, you just, you know, what they call it, you just want to keep it real. Mm-hmm. and not show people that just because you're changing doesn't mean you're going to be different. You're not going to forget about anybody. So my mistake was going back constantly, and I ended up slipping backwards and violated my parole, ended up going back to prison for 2.5 years. I did that sentence and got out, and unfortunately went back again for violation of parole, so for 3 years. So if you look at the pattern, I was in and out. It became a revolving door for me. I had a lot of underlying issues. You know, it wasn't just the gang activity. It was, like I said, it was the substance abuse that kept me falling short. It was decision making. I mean, I didn't know how to be a father to my children. I never really seen healthy relationships growing up. I did on TV. You know, you will watch, let's see, you got Good Times, you got the Brady Bunch, you got different little shows, and their problems always solved in 30 minutes. And yeah. God, I wish that I had that. But right, unfortunately, right. That's not what it was.
Well, talk about how things change when you just pray one day about wanting to be a different man.
Listen, this is amazing to me right here. It was 1999, December the 31st. I'm sitting in prison for the third time. And they said the world was going to end in 2000, Y2K or wherever it is.
I remember that.
And so imagine a room full of criminals, tough guys, but now they're sitting around like wondering, like scared, like if the world's really going to end. And I walk into my cell and I'm sitting there and I'm like, I just dropped to my knees. Because I remember my grandmother telling me to pray. I remember Holly telling me to pray. And, there were a lot of praying people for me. So I said, I'm going to say the realest prayer I ever said in my life to God. And I got on my knees and I said, God, I don't even know if you're listening to me because I know I'm living wrong, but I need you today. I promise that I will let you drive the car and I will become a passenger because my way is constantly getting me in trouble. I'm constantly going in and out of jail. I can't break this cycle that I'm in. And man, I stood up and of course, it was after midnight now. The world was still here, of course. But the question I asked myself was, if I walked out of here today, what would I do? I'm so used to, selling drugs, getting high, the criminal activity. That is so embedded in me. I didn't want to learn anything else. You can put something in front of me, and I'm like, I don't want to learn that. I like this right here. I wanted that instant gratification, whether it was fast money. Bottom line, that was the main drive. And so when I realized that this could be my last go around, I created the OMAC program sitting there. So the OMAC program, it came to me in that prison cell, and it's based upon my own personal life. So operation, I became my own doctor and started operating on myself, removing the things that I know that was hindering me from growing in a positive way and of God. And so operation, when you operate, you make changes. So operation making a change, I wrote it up and I said, hey, who knows? This might one day work. And so far it's working since then.
Well, I love that. I remember the game Operation as the kids that we had where you take the little pieces out.
Everyone loved Operation.
Yeah, absolutely. But how long did it take you to write that, put that together while you were in prison?
I would say a couple of hours. I put it down. I revisited it. I still had a couple more years left to sit in prison.
Sure.
As I got closer of getting out, I was afraid. I was afraid of failing. I was afraid of, I don't want to go back. And I made this big promise to my children, my family, and not only that, but the God, God Almighty himself. And I just didn't want to fail. And I was afraid of that, man. But, I walked out of there with my head up, with my mind made up. Instead of me running from the people that was trying to help me, I got involved with them. I decided to sit at the table because we all have a place at the table. The thing is that we just don't make ourselves available to get that seat, but I start making myself available.
All right. Well, man, I hope you're going to join us tomorrow because we're going to continue talking with Gerald Gibson. You've heard about this program he put together while he was in prison called OMAC, Operation Making a Change, and it's having a big influence here in Central Kentucky. So I hope you'll invite somebody else to join us tomorrow as we continue our conversation with Gerald Gibson on Hope Is Here.
CMI is your full-service human resources provider in Central Kentucky. For 15 years, CMI Human Resources has taken great pride in helping organizations and people work. Whether it's employee handbooks or help in filling a position, no job is too large or too small for CMI. Contact the professionals today at CMI Human Resources, 859-296-2800, or online at cmiconsulting.com.